Good morning. It's absolutely fantastic to be here again, especially after a song like that. Thank you, Hannah, for the choice of songs. It was just so powerful. I couldn't have had a better introduction than knowing that God just holds us all up and God carries our pain and he has called us all into the world to serve him. I feel emotional even before I start. Thanks for the song. So, really looking forward to sharing with you today. It's been 4 years since we've been here as a family. I've been back twice in between myself, but it's been 4 years since myself, Javi, and the three children have been here together. We're a little bit more haggard, a little bit older, tired. But the journey we've been on has been amazing, with ups and downs, and we want to share a little bit of it with that with you today. So, those of you who have been paying attention over the years and remember your history and geography, but maybe there's some people new to what we do today, so I just want to repeat a little bit. So, this is Papua, known as the land of West Papua, or Tana Papua, to the people of Papua. It's the eastern half of the island of New Guinea, and western part of the island of New Guinea, and it's part of Indonesia since 1969. Indonesia took it over from the Dutch. Papua has over 250 tribes and the same amount of languages, and it's incredibly diverse. The most beautiful country, and we've been privileged to live there for 12 years. It's rich in natural resources. It has the largest gold mine in the world. Incredible rainforest, mountains, rivers. It's remote, but rapidly developing. Modernization, hand phones, computers. People have hand phones now in the most remote communities, sometimes even internet, even though there's no roads. There's airstrips like this one. Lots of places are accessed by airplane. So this is the kind of places that we've been living and that we work in. We get to places in different ways. We walk a lot. This is Alana and two of her friends visiting a community a couple of years ago. We drive on rather rickety roads and bridges. There's still no main roads connecting the cities in West Papua. Everything is done by air. And we travel in small planes like this. But in the last 2 years, we have actually moved to a more urban area. And we've seen things rapidly change. A lot of our life is spent in community, living with others. This is a whole family at church one Sunday. We often sit in huts with people, discussing and sharing life together. When we spend an awful lot of time eating and feasting, it's one of the most amazing things about Papuan culture is that things are done in groups and community. And even though there's pain and suffering, people share together and there's always enough food for everybody. But things are changing, rapidly changing. In July this year, Amnesty International published a report about West Papua, which said that Papua was plagued by poverty, underdevelopment, and oppression. That's the first time an international organization has come out and spoken so strongly about it. Unfortunately, there's now a culture of impunity about killings and abuse, there's increased military presence, and we're also seeing in a rise in Islamic militant groups coming in and settling in secret in West Papua. And so the security situation is becoming quite difficult. It's harder for people to speak out. It's harder for even people to meet, for us to meet with certain people in public. Also alongside this, there's been health failures and food shortages. This year there was a measles epidemic because kids hadn't been immunized for nearly 12 years in some regions. And Papuans, due to an increased transmigration of people from overpopulated areas in other parts of Indonesia, are becoming a minority in their own land. They're losing their land and they're losing their identity. So we're finding that we're working with a people, increasingly now, especially in the cities, that are traumatized by many years of living like this and being told that they're worthless. They've actually been told that they're not human. Politicians have said awful things about them on television. And so their self-esteem and identity are broken. and the image of God has been broken in them. And then within that, relationships among themselves start to be broken, relationships in family start to break down between communities and their relationship with the land. So what do we do amidst this to try and bring hope? So as Papua partners, Javi and myself and all the other people we work with, we're walking alongside and supporting individuals, organizations, community groups and churches. So they're equipped, confident and passionate to transform their communities and nation. We try not to hold too tight to stuff ourselves and try and constantly release it to all the people that we partner with. We try to be people-centered, focusing on the people, to release them to what God has called them to do, like that song. Sometimes I think in charities and churches, we can often see it as us going to help other people. But we've found that people flourish when we just spend time together, when we live together, and we work and solve the problems as friends, as partners, as colleagues. And that's when amazing things happen, and God really works in those situations. So this is one of the, this is kind of what we're hoping to see, our vision, is justice and peace, transform communities, mobilize church, self-belief, and knowledge of worth in Christ to restore those relationships, to restore the belief in self. And we want people to have vision, hope, and then act for the future. And this is kind of a verse that motivates us. I think we reflected on it maybe a few weeks ago here. John 10:10, I have come so they may have life and have it to the full. We want to see people living the life that they were created for. The life that people are living is not what God's intention was. He didn't intend for people's relationships to be broken. He didn't intend for his people to be oppressed. So we want and we work alongside others to allow people to be free, to equip people to work towards justice in those situations. And also to think, how can the church in Papua respond to this situation? How can they be salt and light and start being that change agent in their communities? So, sorry about the complicated slide. We always find it difficult to explain how we do what we do. But really, working with people, change gets driven or change happens by centering people and local people. So at the moment, we're working with 6 different organizations that work with over 200 different communities throughout Papua. We also work with 110 local churches, which altogether have about 12,000 members. And then now we've started working with wider networks like literacy networks, women's networks, which reach to about 5,000 people. And in the last 2 years, we've had the privilege to start to engage at the synod, with the synod leaders and the church leaders, which cover over 80% of the Papuan population. So we can't, you know, we're not super people to do all this stuff. We have to work with others, accompany others, and help others achieve that vision. And then amazing things can be done when we as Christians, we partner together, and we think and we dream together. So through this process of just being together and living together, lots of amazing things have happened. And we want to share just with you a few of these stories and to see how change actually happens. Okay, then the first one is church and community mobilization for transformation and peace. So our motto for this is that we will never change the world by going to church. We will only change the world by being the church, by being salt and light in the community, as I said. So churches in many communities in Papua have lost their relevance. Lots of people are leaving them because they weren't responding to what was going on in the church. But this process, which we call church and community mobilization, which I've spoken a bit about before, has changed the whole way the church is engaging and thinking about what it does. So basically, it's a lot about people getting together, eating together, studying scripture together, and from that, looking at what they can do for their community. So amazing things have come out of this, like communities building houses for people in their community, providing food, resolving conflicts. And one of the amazing things we've found by people just actually going and sitting and talking together, our view of what we study in the Bible is often is affected by who we study it with. Because I'm not going to read the same text, a text in the same way as a widow from a remote community is going to read it. And it's been incredible when people come and they're like, God really does care about us. We never heard this before. God cares about the oppressed, he cares about the poor, and when we read the scriptures and we discuss it, it becomes clear and they become motivated and engaged to help other people. And suddenly men are hearing women speak. Well, it's a new thing. It doesn't normally happen, and that also has a transforming power on the men and the relationships in the community. And this is still at early stages, but there's about 110 churches involved, and it's very exciting, and we're training more people to be trainers, and we see that as the future of what we're doing. I think part of the church mobilization, we've started to engage with church leaders, as these guys have, the guys in the top, they have the most influence throughout Papua. These are three heads of synod, the guy on the left and the two on the right. One is in charge of the Baptist, one is in charge of the Gospel Tabernacle Church, and one is in charge of the Evangelical Church. And they have incredible power in Papua. They're the ones that the president comes to talk to when he visits. They seek their counsel. If they want to cause trouble, they can cause an awful lot of trouble. And they've only in the last 2 years started speaking out on injustice and calling the church to action. We were able to facilitate a trip for the three of them to visit South Africa for 2 weeks in August 2017, and they met a lot of bishops and anti-apartheid activists, and they were learning about the role of the church under apartheid and how the church acted and mobilized to speak out about injustices. And it was a very transformative trip. And since they've come back, they have been sharing knowledge about this. And this is some of the leaders as well, with the gentleman who was the author of the Kairos document, which was the document in South Africa that started the church being mobilized and called them to action. And the picture here on the left is the church service that we had when we came back. And you can see that the young people were just so motivated, they were spilling out onto the street. We couldn't fit everybody in. That people are so thirsty for their leaders to be speaking out on this and saying, we understand where you're at. And then, as I said, the youth have become more disillusioned and are looking for other ways to fight back because the church has not been responding. So in May this year, we were able to facilitate an amazing 3 days and brought together young people from like four or five different church denominations, which we realized afterwards was the first time people from Protestant denominations and the Catholics all sat in one room together. They had never been in one room together. And we spent 3 days talking about justice and peace and what we can do as Christian young people. And from that, a new network has been born, which, as I speak, is starting to develop and think about what they're going to do. And then this, for me, has program with women has been a dream. We've been kind of working on the edges with women, but we haven't felt as in our role as not being from the place that we could start to touch on issues of violence, domestic violence. And the first picture on the top is actually from a holiday that we had about 2 years ago. And we were sitting around the fire with our friend Yapina, which you've heard us talk about before. And she shared with us a burden that she had about helping victims of domestic violence because she herself was a victim. And around that fire that day, we discussed about how we could do this. We didn't have any resources at that time. We prayed. We said, we're going to start it anyway. I don't remember. We did actually put it in a newsletter and ask for your prayer. And 2 weeks after that, the Canadian government approached us and said, we'll fund a program for women. Do you have any ideas? We've been working with church facilitators, training young women and young men from churches from the highlands and from the cities in how to talk about some of these difficult studies using Bible studies, using stories about women from the Bible, stories about men, stories about relationships, about families, and through those Bible studies, bringing out key lessons. And then we're also starting next month, we're not there, but Yapina and her team are carrying it out, starting to train paralegals. So to help women and families through legal processes when it comes to resolving those kind of conflicts. So maybe the picture on the left is part of the workshops in helping some of the young men understand what it feels like when you're a victim of violence, that you are quietened, you're silenced, you're tied in by so many factors in culture that you can't move. So we're trying to raise awareness as well among men so they can become active and stand up against what's happening to women in their society. And then this part, which is about equipping Christian organizations and networks, which is actually probably, for me, one of the hardest parts of our work, because it's kind of a bit, you know, it's finances, it's organizations, but this has been one of the core things that we've done, which is really about equipping people to do the kind of things that we do. So we, from the outside, don't come in. So big organizations don't need to come in and do it, but the Papuans themselves can run programs, can carry out activities. So on the top, you can see that's actually us planning a finance system, every single bit on post-its. We use a lot of post-its. And then we've done, in the last year or two, helping the Synod for the Christian Church of Indonesia do their strategic planning, so envisioning what they as a church are going to do for the next 5 years. That was very exciting. And it's also fun. We do a lot of team building and leadership stuff. And it's fantastic to be able to see the equivalent of bishops from here running around, playing chasing and games, and actually releasing some of the stress that they have and being able to reflect on what they do every day. And this process helps someone like Pinaton in the middle at the bottom, who's a member of our partner Yasumat. When we first arrived in Papua 13 years ago, Pinaton was, you know, he was living in the house that we were living, and the church leader said, "This is Pinaton, he's going to help look after you and, you know, guard, make sure nothing happens to you." And today, 12 years later, he's now leading a program in his community. And over the last 2 years, he's facilitated provision of water systems for 200 people, and he's now part of the gender-based violence team working with young men. So it's just incredible what happens when people are equipped and freed and released to their calling. And it has a multiplying effect. So rather as a charity or as an organization coming in and saying, what programs are we going to do, when we're listening to others about what is needed, all these amazing things, which we've talked about before, have happened, such as toilets, which I think you all participated in a couple of years ago, choosing which was the best toilet. There's now over 300 or 400 toilets because of the... Some had it, and there was a bit of competition, so other people then felt they had to build it too, so there's been a bit of social pressure to have the best toilet. And then people... The photo, it might be a bit difficult to see, but that is a pile of corn. That is like offering for a women's group who advocate on HIV. So the churches themselves are funding these groups and funding these initiatives, and they bring what they have, such as corn or sweet potatoes. And then we've got parallel schools now, over 120 schools that our partners running, health groups, craft groups. In Bokondini, where we used to live, there's a youth training center with computers. And many other things that are developing. And I'm just going to hand over to my very handsome other half to share co-worker. Just to talk for a few minutes about some of the work he's been doing with women's savings groups.
I need to time this. And I got a few notes. Can you hear me? Okay. So, good morning. And finally, meeting the shareholders of Papua Partners. Yeah. And today is not about one story. I have 600 to tell. And I am the messenger, truly. And I work with savings groups in West Papua, Indonesia, since 2013. So, a savings group basically... It's a group of people coming together to save their money. But the savings groups are more than that, are the admin person for families to learn how to manage money, plan their lives. That's what we do. But going back in time, and in many places the situation remains the same, not knowing how to manage money, how to plan, how to calculate profits, how to give without being hurt, is a huge burden for everybody. And I would say 1.5 million people are experiencing that problem every day as we speak. So we came up with an alternative. I wasn't an expert on economics. I'm not, definitely, but we came up with an alternative, and this is the savings groups, which we started in the village of Bocondini 4 years ago. So this is part of the training that we do everywhere we can work. So what we did in Bocondini is to put together a system for people to save their money, open bank the savings group's account with specific numbers, and we took it from there. So the first savings group is called Yarowok, the Yarowok Bank, which is a parallel bank. It's a community bank, and now it has 150 account holders. That's what was the beginning. 2 years later, we expanded the training to other areas of Papua. So now we have 600 account holders who have an impact on over 4,000 people. Never dreamed of anything like that before in my life, but it's happening. Not without challenges, backwards and forwards, tears, sweats, walking here and there, but it's not only my efforts. There's a lot of people pushing this forward, including yourselves. So that was the situation was like, and what's the future? The future is about training more people and more people to do that kind of work everywhere. To the point that now we have four denominations working together, adopting the training of the savings groups into their congregations, like, let's say, Westcott, Dorkin, Avenger. So everybody trying to get together and train their own people to face what's happening now in the future. So it's not just a coping mechanism, but it's we need to thrive. That's what we are meant to be doing on this earth, is to have a fulfilling life. So it's not about the money, which is an important part, of course, but it's to give people confidence to move forward in life. So it is transformational, individually and collectively, across church denominations. It is Papuan-owned. I'm not here, and Papuans are still working, which is very good. And they need staff, and they need assets, and that is the challenge of success, their success. And everything, basically, is hanging from one idea, only one idea, which is hope. This is the starting point, hope, justice. We've got to do this. We can do it. It's proven to be working everywhere where we've been. So now we have 13 groups. From that one in Bocondini, now to 13 over the highlands and on the coast, and hopefully everywhere at some point. And just to finish, and this presentation, there's a dream across all these savings groups everywhere that one day there will be a development bank embracing them all to do business the way people understand, according to the culture, according to what people are at. That's the biggest dream that we have. And it's across. It doesn't matter where you are. We all share that in our hearts. And we are working very hard to accomplish that at some point. Thank you very much.
Sorry, we're not finished yet, quite. just as one other area that we've been really motivated to work on over the last 2 years because of the situation that I explained earlier is speaking out. This has become quite a risky thing to do in the current context in West Papua, but I just wanted to share you a story that gives me courage and maybe will give you courage within your own context, that we all can speak out for people. We can all walk alongside people. First of all, this is a lady called Lagasa. She's a widow. She's from the most remote community you could imagine. It takes about 10 days to walk to the town where you have to get an airplane to the main town. She's had about 8 children. She is about this high. I just want to read a verse that motivated her to do what she did, which I'll talk about it in a second. The verse is from Proverbs 31, verse 8. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. And I think, you know, even having been there for 12 years, I would never have gone and say, Lagasa, would you speak out? It wouldn't have occurred to me. But God had chosen her, like that song that we sang before. We had heard that there was a visit of the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food and Healthcare was coming to West Papua. The United Nations sends these envoys to countries around the world to see what they're doing. And the government would not let her come to Papua. She was only allowed in Jakarta, and we had to lobby through another group of activists to get time. And so a delegation was being set up to go to Jakarta. And there was a few people from our partner that said, we'd really like to go. And Lagasa has been working with us as a midwife for a number of years. And she said, I want to go. I want to speak. She doesn't speak any Indonesian, but off she went. And she gave a testimony about famine and about food shortages in her village. She wore her net bag. This is her, where she had to have interpretation with the United Nations Special Rapporteur. And her testimony was televised across the entire nation of Indonesia. And I asked her, were you scared? And she said, no, God gave me courage. And for me, that's just, it's phenomenal. And is a huge challenge to me. And just to finish the future, before Dad talks a little bit about funding and support, what does the future hold? We've recently set up an organization in Papua called Iwatali. I for Indigenous, I for Indigenous. Watali are the beginnings of different Indigenous languages meaning peace. So it's really Indigenous peace for Papua. And these are the people. I'm not going to introduce them all now, but there are the board and staff out there that are very capable. There's environmental activists. The lady in the middle is a human rights activist. There's literacy people, finance people. And really, they're extremely equipped to carry our vision forward. So what is our role as Papuans become able and willing to take this vision on? So that's why we're on sabbatical at the moment. We're thinking and praying about what the next steps hold for us. So we would ask for your prayers for that. And with that, I'll hand over to Dad. Thank you.
I won't be a minute. Just before you started looking at that slide, it occurred to me as we were listening to all that's happened right across Papua, and if anyone's been here from the beginning, the multiplication has been staggering. Our budget is exactly what it was back in 2006. This year, the total funding we had this year was over 100,000. However, that includes restricted funding for some of the projects that Naomi described earlier on, the Church and Community Mobilization for Peace project. Our operational budget to keep us going in Papua is this amount that's just under 60,000. We would like to raise more than that because that's just the basic, that just keeps us there. So each year we have to raise that amount. And those of you who come to this every time we do a presentation, sort of process is pretty familiar. I've tried to make it more complicated by putting a graph, to make it more exciting. It's just to say that, to repeat again, that over half of all our needs in Papua are met by giving, standing order giving, primarily from the church and the village and people around. The others, we expect to get other contributions from direct gifts. We do get some management fees for managing those projects. But that still leaves a shortage, a minimum shortage of about £11,000, and we never know where it's going to come from. Any year we start out, we've no idea. The trustees sit there, and the sort of volunteers that we have sit there, and we look at our cash flow, and it drops off the edge every 3 months. And we just pray that that happens. The real number that we should be really getting in is over 20 if we're to run things properly. This is a minimum number. It works out at about £2,000 a month that we need. We do need your support. We're so grateful that you've come on the journey for all these years. Obviously, today is Papua Sunday. You can give in the envelope or write a check. The other area where it would be great just to, if anybody here is for the first time, talk to me about starting a standing order or just go on the website and start a direct debit to supporters, because that's the piece of our funding that keeps us going from month to month. Again, on the fundraising side, we've had a number of people doing various fundraising throughout the year. We've had Malcolm did this quiz night, which was amazing. Rob Phillips rode his bicycle to Brighton. Sally Mavin, one of our trustees, rode all the way around Loch Ness, and so on and so forth. And that all comes into that area. If you can help us with that, have any ideas for that, or can do something yourself, that's really, really, would be really fantastic. We have a group, we meet, there are four trustees of Papua Partners, two of whom in Scotland, which is really convenient, and two of us are relatively local, but we have three sort of, they're not volunteers, they're really part of the trustee group, and we couldn't do it without them, who help us. We meet every fortnight, Grant Smetham, Jackie Phillips, and Mike Thomas. And essentially, they do all the grunt while the trustees take all the credit, essentially. But anyone who has time or has got any skills, we'd love to have you on board to do anything. That little request about accounts is by virtue of the fact that I actually doing the presentation and I need somebody. So that's how that got in there. But most of all, I think that we need, and Naomi mentioned his prayer. A lot of things going forward we need prayer for. We'll be meeting with the trustees over the next short while to decide what the future actually is. We know it'll be different. We know it won't be as intensely us being present there, but we're not sure where that is actually going to lead. The really fantastic news is that the Papuans are taking all that over. Papua Partners will still have a role and will still be very important, but we need to pray for what that is. Naomi mentioned in passing safety. Papua is becoming quite a dangerous place to be. The increased sort of immigration into Papua or transmigration into Papua with all the Muslim influence and a lot of extreme groups makes it less safe by the day. Obviously, travelling around in airplanes in Papua's, we need their prayer for that. Iwatali, Naomi talked about, who will really be the future of the work, probably centred in Papua. As they start out on that journey, they need our prayers. And the church leaders as well. So that's our needs. We know we're so grateful for what you've done down the years. No one could have ever imagined we'd be here today, and the breadth of the work that we've seen in Papua would be there. So thank you for coming on the journey. Amen.